Hello and welcome to Object Matters. My name's Craig Barker and I'm the Head of Public Engagement at the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. Object Matters is a podcast that explores the relationship between our guests and a item within the collection of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. This episode, it's very close to home. I'm thrilled to be joined by my colleague in the museum's public education team, Julian Woods. Julian is the Public Engagement Coordinator for the Chow Chak Wing Museum and is a cultural arts worker. Thank you, Julian, for joining me today.
Thanks, Craig, for having me on.
It's kind of nice because we sit next to each other at our desks all the time, so it's kind of good to now be recording a conversation that we would normally be having a little more informally. Can I begin by asking you about your role at the Chow Chak Wing Museum? What does your job actually involve?
Sure, it involves a myriad of tasks, so yeah, working across education, public programs and events in the Chow Chak Wing Museum, working with you, supporting you in rolling those out. And so that can be a kind of day-to-day corresponding with teachers, with school bookings coming in, looking through the collection, particularly through art, as looking at developing up some education programs going forward, and yeah, just helping with the running of public programs, so getting those onto the website so letting people know about them, and yeah, a whole bunch of other things and duties that kind of my mind's not thinking about.
But yeah, it's all the public it's all the public facing stuff,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The exciting engagement things where we get to make the collections and objects come alive. Yeah.
And where did you start at the museum?
I started in this role at the museum last year in October, so I think it's coming up to 9 or 10 months now I've been here.
Mm. Yeah. And you're still here.
And I'm still here. I survived.
So before we work for the Chow Chak Wing Museum, I mean, could you tell our listeners a bit about your background and your research interests? Where have you worked and, prior to joining the Chow Chak Wing team?
Sure. So perhaps I'll go step by step backwards because there is a connection back to to Sydney University and to the collection itself.
And indeed the object you're talking about today too.
Exactly. Yeah, yes. Yeah. So I've got fond memories of the particular object. So before starting at the Chow Chak Wing Museum, I was working at Bathurst Regional Art Gallery. So that's a regional art gallery that's in the city of Bathurst, which is about 3 hours drive west of Sydney in the central west. And I was there for 5 years, started working there as the curatorial assistant, and then moved up into audience engagement. So similar to my role here at the Chow Chak Wing Museum.
And it's a wonderful space too, isn't it, the Bathurst Gallery?
It is. It's fantastic. And it was built in 1989 as a purpose-built art gallery. So similarly with the Chow Chak Wing Museum, it was built for purpose. So it's a lovely little space and got a fantastic art collection that has a lot of local artists, nationally significant artists.
And so where were you before Bragg?
Before Bragg, I was in Sydney. I worked for an auction house, and before that I studied at Sydney University doing majored in art history, did honours in art history and also majored in history and focusing on Australian history and art history, so particularly like 19th century to contemporary. And during that time here at Sydney University, I was very fortunate in getting a role with this University of Sydney Union. They had a student position where they offered it to 2 students working with their art collection. And in that role, I would work under the supervision of the university art collection curator, Anne Stephen, Dr. Anne Stephen, and the university museum's collections team. So that was about 10 years ago that I started that role, actually.
Gosh.
And I was in that.
It's not fast, isn't it?
It has. Yeah. I was in that role for 2 years. So I got some exposure to the University of Sydney Union Art Collection, as well as the University Art Collection, and the museums more broadly back then when they were in their separate spaces, so the Nicholson, the Maclay, and the Art Gallery in the War Memorial Bridge, and had various other experiences at that time, volunteering for the Art Gallery, Verge Gallery as well, which is the Student Union Art Gallery, and a lot of other spaces around Sydney, so.
Well, talking about that prior experience with the University of Sydney Union Art Collection, and again, the work we're discussing today originally is part of that collection. What is the union? Why did it have an art collection? And, I mean, you talked about your student placement, but, I mean, how did you become to be involved with it?
Sure. So the University of Sydney Union is kind of the life and blood of the students on campus. Brain's a bit foggy in terms of when it was started, but it started as a debating society, I believe.
It's back in the 19th century. It's been around for a long time.
It has, and I think it's one of the oldest student unions in the world.
Yeah, I believe so too.
But it still has got strong roots in debating. But it evolved from that, and it runs the Clubs and Societies program, which there's countless everything from...
And they're setting up for Welcome Week as we record this, and I noticed the stalls are all sorts of clubs and societies that didn't exist when I was a student.
No, even indeed from 10 years ago when I was here, there's everything coming out from beauty and fashion to art, history, food...
Politics and culture.
Sports, there's a lot of opportunity for students on campus here. So it's quite exciting. And I was involved in the Fine Arts Society many years ago. So they run that. They also have different outlets on campus. They run events. They've got the student bars on campus, all sorts of different music programs, events. And, yeah, they're really the life and blood of the student life on campus.
So how do they come to have an art collection?
So... the art collection, again, my won't be exactly accurate, but I believe it started in the early 1900s. They have quite an interesting and progressive history with kind of working with artists in kind of avant-garde ways. So they have large murals in the home building by Lo Schiavo, and they were painted, who was an Italian immigrant who moved over here in the 20th century, large murals, one Shakespeare mural, and the History of Mankind, I think that's the other large mural.
Oh, yes,
as
that's
well,
right.
In the home
yes, that's right, yes.
And one of the, I think it was the Shakespeare one, won the Sulman Prize in 1941, I think it was. So very large-scale murals. Another interesting facet into the University of Sydney Union art collection is a controversial purchase they made in, I think it was around 1927, painting by Maurice Flaminck, called After the Storm, and it was purchased for, from memory, only a couple of pounds, but this was during the Great Depression, but now it's worth over $300,000, so significant value and great foresight by the committee, the art committee that proposed that purchase. Mm. And going forward, in the 1980s and 1990s, they employed, as the collection grew throughout the 20th century, they employed a curator full-time. Yep. They started a gallery, the Sir Herman Black Gallery, which had wonderful, great openings on their lovely outdoor balcony. Mm. And being...
It's in the Wentworth Building for people on the campus, isn't it?
Yeah, in the Wentworth Building on the other side of City Road, which I believe is the International Student Lounge now. And it had close affiliations with SCA and various other kind of like tin sheds when that existed as well. They displayed those and lots of other art, local art galleries in the Newtown area, which Sydney University is kind of neighbouring onto. Mm. And during that time, the curators purchased a number of Aboriginal artworks as well. So they had great foresight in purchasing contemporary Aboriginal artworks. And so that aligns with kind of the object that I've selected as well.
Well, before we go into the object, I just want to quickly touch upon, in your current role, this concept of marrying arts with education. You know, it's I think all of our listeners will agree how important it is. But, I mean, how do you see how the Chow Chak Wing Museum's education program can really make a contribution towards arts education?
With the Chow Chak Wing Museum, it's such a wonderfully deep and diverse and broad collection, traversing deep history, many cultures, many times, many art forms as well. So it's an absolute treasure trove to consider art education. You can look at depictions of art through ancient Greek pottery, Roman pottery, also all the way up to contemporary photography, sculpture, paintings throughout the Renaissance, Baroque, and it's just identifying kind of particular areas to focus on is difficult because there's so many.
It's so broad, isn't it?
So broad, and having a diverse interest myself, and seeing influences cross over across cultures and all the opportunities that it's hard to kind of focus on one, but it's exciting.
Well, look forward to seeing how we grow it and develop it. But Object Matters, the podcast, it's all about an object, all about a work. What work from the collection have you chosen for us to focus on today?
So I've chosen a photograph. It's a black and white photograph of, it's a portrait. And you have a woman's face in the middle. She's got short hair and she's holding, or she's on the sides of her, on the side of her, top of her head, there's two hands that are holding it, and the arms are kind of coming in from the left and right-hand side of the photograph. You can't see kind of the arms beyond halfway up the forearm, so they're cut off, and she's also cut off kind of halfway down her neck and kind of chopped off on the top of her head. So it's a very tight cropped photograph. You can see she has an earring on her right ear. She's also staring straight at the camera.
Very intensely, isn't she?
Yeah, very engaged, intense, and definite stare. And the face has this kind of object kind of over the front of it, like a veil, a black veil or some netting, and that has some crinkles in it. So kind of, if you, depending on the quality of image that you're looking at this through, it can look like kind of a cracked ceramic effect, like some crazing or a marbling kind of effect on the face. But when you look at it more closely, you can see that it's kind of looks like a veil of some kind.
So, I mean, it's an intensely powerful work, and we'll talk more about who the person is in the image and who took the photograph in a moment. But why did you choose this particular image for the podcast?
It has a lot of personal connection to me.
Yep.
Of course, it comes from the University of Sydney Union Art Collection.
So you encountered this in its previous life on campus when it was in the collection when you were working there 10 years ago, didn't you?
I did, yes. So I first encountered it, it would have been a couple of months over 10 years ago today, and indeed it appeared in an exhibition that I co-curated with my colleague back then, India, in an exhibition that was held at Verge Gallery, looking at kind of the human form and the human figure and what it means to be. That exhibition was called, titled Being. So I featured back then, and so I think I had a lot of affiliation with that. And I also do admire photography. That's one of my preferred art forms or favourite art forms. And, yeah, it's just a very compelling image for me.
Now, the photograph itself was taken by a figure very well known in late 20th century Australian photography, Michael Riley. Who was Michael Riley?
The Michael Riley was Wiradjuri Kamilaroi photographer.
Yeah.
And he unfortunately died at a very young age of 44 in 2004. He had a career that kind of spanned from the mid-80s up until the early 2000s. But even in that short period of time, he produced an incredible amount of bodies of work. And they're very much praised back then as they are today.
Yeah.
They're held within all the major cultural institutions around Australia. And the NGA had a major retrospective of his in 2006 that explored all of his photographs.
They produced a catalogue too, didn't they?
Produced a great catalogue, which you can access online, actually.
It's
a lot of resources on there as well. There's an archive side of it, so that's really good if any listeners want to kind of have a deep dive into his work, and all of the essays are all accessible on there.
Fantastic.
But he worked a lot in portrait photography, where he photographed his friends, his family, and those in his community.
Yep.
And I think you get a real sense
of that. Where was he based when he was working?
So he was based in Sydney, but he would often travel back to, so his, I should go to talk about a bit about his family. His mum, Dorothy Nay Wright, her mob comes from Kamilaroi country, specifically up around Moree.
Yep.
So Michael has, when he was a young child, would travel up to Moree during Christmas and Easter times to connect with her mob up there.
Yep.
And would continue to do that after he moved to Sydney.
Right, okay.
So maintaining the relationship with his maternal kin up there.
Yeah.
And his father, Alan Riley, came from Dubbo.
Right.
So Wiradjuri country. So grew up there. And then he moved to Sydney to initially pursue a carpenter's apprentice.
Right, okay.
However, he stumbled upon in 1982 a photography workshop by Bruce Hart at the Tin Sheds workshops.
Yep.
So
here on campus?
Here on campus, exactly. Just kind of on City Road, kind of where there's a Tin Sheds gallery there now that maintains that reputation.
It's no longer a tin shed, however.
No, it's not. It's a concrete box. Yeah. But still retaining that name. And actually, the collection has a wonderful array of tin shed of the posters produced by the Tin Sheds, because they were very active in that in that area of producing. And indeed, the featured person in this photograph contributed to one of the posters in the collection as a photographer.
This is in the Chow Chak Wing collection.
That's in the Chow Chak Wing. Yeah. So he from that transition to work at Sydney College of the Arts as the darkroom technician.
Yep.
So building upon that workshop, he grew in his kind of expertise and technical ability of photography.
Right, yes. Yeah.
And that actually stems from his childhood. He saved up some money to buy a brownie box camera. I started experimenting with photography.
So he had an interest from childhood.
So, yeah, he had an interest from childhood. His father gave him an SLR camera when he was a teenager. And so he was always experimenting and also looking through the book, a photographic album of his grandfather, who was Alexander Tracker Riley. He's a very well-known police person in the police force in New South Wales, and he was the first Aboriginal person to attain to become a sergeant in the police force in New South Wales.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. And he worked on a lot of different trials in the 20th century around New South Wales. But very well-respected family. And he's got connection. That family have connections in Sydney, which supported his move to Sydney. And while he kind of connecting with a whole bunch of different artists, particularly Aboriginal urban artists working in all the different areas in Sydney.
And that sort of mid-80s, late-80s, which is really when you have the explosion too of the commercial aspect of contemporary art being created by First Nations people.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a connection with the person in the portrait here, how there was the establishment of the Bumali Artists Cooperative in 1987. So that was a year after this photograph was taken.
Yep.
And that involved Michael Riley and 9 other Aboriginal artists, and they wanted a space for them to show their work that wasn't traditional in media.
Yep.
It was new.
Yep.
So this is particularly interesting in terms of education as well, how you can have identifying Aboriginal people work in various other mediums. But what does that actually mean? What does it tell you in the object? How are you meant to read it when you know that?
Yes.
When you know who created the photograph and who is the photograph of?
Yeah.
You know, how do you frame kind of looking
that
through that lens?
Mm. Well, let's move on to the subject of the portrait. Of course, the work is titled Tracy Hands Up, so we know it's a Tracy. Which Tracy is it?
It's Tracy Moffat.
Yeah, so another renowned figure.
Absolutely, another very highly regarded, perhaps one of Australia's most highly regarded artists. She's very successful. She was the first Aboriginal artist to have a solo exhibition at the Venice Biennale in 2017.
Yep.
And she's well acclaimed overseas, producing an array of significant works. And she works in photography as well, as well as film. So Michael Riley also works in film as well. He's produced a lot of film works. One of them actually documents kind of the establishing of the Bumali Aboriginal Artist Cooperative, interviewing 5 artists, including Tracy Moffat as well.
Right.
So around that kind of mid-80s period, there was a real explosion of these what you'd term Aboriginal urban artists, and kind of not wanting to be affiliated with that traditional art form and being kind of pigeonholed in that area.
Yeah.
They want to break out of that. Change the narrative, but still retain kind of that connection to country. So one of the beautiful things about Michael Riley's work is if you see his series Fly Blown or Cloud, they have this real strong connection to country. You can see, coming from Bathurst, which is actually in that central west area on Wiradjuri country, you have those vast plains of grassland around, and you can see some of Michael Reilly's images that kind of show that blue sky with the grass-covered ground, and also the change of seasons. He works a lot in, or one of the images in Flyblown, you can see a dead galah on this dry, dirt, cracked kind of surface. So that idea, connection with the seasons and the land and that,
Look, I was going to ask about the relationship between Reilly and Moffat, but you've already alluded to it a little bit already. But, I mean, they're part of that growing community of artists. I mean, did they, you know, looking back now, does Tracy regard it as part of, you know, something of a cultural revolution that we now see it more broadly, or were they just doing what they wanted to do at the time?
I think it's a bit of both, really. They just wanted to, so Tracy Moffat, she comes from Queensland, from Brisbane. She studied visual communications at Queensland University of Technology in the early 80s.
Yep.
So similarly, how Reilly moved to Sydney to study, well, he moved into photography around the early 80s.
Yep.
They all kind of came together in Sydney. You've got also Mervyn Bishop, renowned photographer who took that image of Gough Whitlam.
Yeah, the sand.
The sand.
It's Vincent Ngari's hands.
Yeah. Brenda L. Croft. And many, many other Aboriginal artists that, were looking to kind of establish their own art practice and be known for that and stand up to kind of the institutions as well, like the state galleries and the national galleries, and that perhaps weren't showing those artworks as much as they wanted.
Yes, right.
But today we have that legacy of Tracy Moffat kind of exhibiting so many shows overseas, and Michael Reilly as well. Today his photographs are so well regarded across collections and museums in Australia.
So this particular image that we're looking at the moment, when was the photograph actually taken, and do you know much about the background to the image?
So the image was taken in 1986 or 85. I've seen two versions. Ours was printed in 1986. There are some versions, interestingly, with a blue tint around the white of the eyes.
Interesting. Okay.
So examples of that can be seen in the Art Gallery of New South Wales collection and the National Gallery of Australia collection.
Was he hand adding that tinting, or?
It would have been put on post, yes. So this is an entirely black and white image, and it would have been hand tinted. I notice on the National Gallery of Australia, blue looks a bit more faded than the whether that's to do with how much it's been exhibited,
yes,
I don't know.
Yes.
Or
the reproduction online.
There's many, many questions there. Mm. I don't know exactly about the production of this image. However, a really significant thing was it was part of an exhibition called NARDOC 86.
Right.
So NARDOC kind of is, if people know what NAIDOC Week is, which is a celebration of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and they run a whole series of events all around different communities in Australia, and they theme it each year. So there's, I think,
this year it was all about respect for elders.
Yes. Yeah. And so it was in 1986, and it was co-curated by Tracy Moffat.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes.
And Tracy was approached by a person called Anthony Ace Burke to put on this exhibition. And Tracy said she would do it, but only if there would be no, or his gallery would drop all European and white Australian photographers, and it would be an
completely Indigenous,
completely Aboriginal photography exhibition. That was a bit of a...
It's very ballsy of her.
Yes, it is. But she took up the challenge.
Yep.
And it created this, and so it was the first ever completely Aboriginal photographic exhibition, which again shows that kind of breakaway from that traditional media that Aboriginal artists were kind of known upon back then, with that explosion of the Western Desert art into the international art market.
Yes, yeah.
So that's where this image comes in. Michael Reilly was, he worked purely in kind of film and photography for his images, so he was a very obvious choice for Tracy.
Yep.
And this was one of the images that was in that exhibition in 1986. Mm. And it's part of kind of a suite of portraits that Michael Reilly took from the early 80s into the 90s that the black and white portraits, they're all black and white portraits, which is quite interesting. I think that links to his and photography's kind of looking back at historic photographs. Like, photographers were able to produce coloured images at this point in time, but all of Michael Reilly's portraits are
black and white.
Black and white. Mm. And the cropping of the image as well, I think, is quite cinematic.
It is, yes. It's got a very widescreen approach to it, doesn't it? Yeah.
So I think, and their connection, actually, Tracy and Reilly, Michael Reilly, they have intertwined a lot. So Tracy Moffat was offered a job to work with Michael Reilly at SCA while he was there.
Yep.
They worked a lot in kind of ABC and SBS, producing different films and documentaries and all that. But I think, yeah, just both artists work in that photography and film media. Mm.
You're listening to Object Matters. My guest for this episode is Julian Woods. So, I mean, how does this particular image fit in to Michael Reilly's broader body of work? And I guess, I mean, you've already alluded to this in quite a fair bit in our conversation, but more generally within the history of Australian photography.
So I see it as mentioning before, that black and white imagery kind of harks back to early historical photographs of Aboriginal people by Europeans back in the 19th and early 20th century. And they're often very composed, and you just get a sense that the subjects weren't kind of
allowed. Weren't necessarily willing participants.
They weren't allowed to kind of develop their pose or represent themselves how they want to be represented.
Yep.
There'd be some exception to that, sure, but by and large, you don't get, they're often in traditional dress or doing corroboree or doing certain actions. They're very rigid as well.
Yeah.
And this kind of, I think, breaks that trend. It's a very, and a lot of those portraits also, you see the eyes actually do look straight on at the viewer as well.
Yeah.
So the pose often isn't kind of looking away or indirect gaze.
Yep.
It is a direct gaze. There's a historic photograph of Truganini, a couple of her, and one of Reilly's photographs called Maria has a woman with a necklace around her neck, which kind of looks back at that Truganini image. Truganini wore a shell necklace around her neck. So she was Tasmanian Aboriginal one, and being of that particular region, that was a shell necklace was significant to her culture.
Yeah.
And that image kind of looks back at that, but it's taken by Michael Reilly, who is Aboriginal, and so you have a bit more of that agency. And in this, you can also see that how Tracy is playing around with her kind of pose.
Yep.
With photography at this point in time, you can have a cover sheet as well, so you can select the image that you want.
Yep.
And in the National Gallery of Australia catalogue of the retrospective, you can see there's samples of the different poses of Tracy Moffat.
It's a wonderfully evocative image. We know that this work, and indeed other works by Michael Reilly that are now in the Chow Chek Wing Museum, were transferred from the University of Sydney Union Collection in 2019. So long after you had exhibited this particular image. But how did the Union acquire the works?
So this work, I was looking at through the database and through the artist file, it was purchased in 1991.
Yep.
Purchased with three other Michael Reilly photographs that are actually all, they've all been transferred to the University Art Collection.
Yep.
Maori Women. So again, that particular image traces his connection, his maternal connection to Maori.
Yep.
And that's quite a fun image you can see of a group of Maori women. Dorothy and Charles and Adam Perkins.
Ah, yes.
So an image of those as well. Yes.
Again, a very important figure in the University of Sydney's history as well.
Indeed, yes, with the Freedom Rides and being the first Aboriginal graduate of university here. Yes.
So in terms of this particular image, with the image Tracy hands up, how would you teach visiting students using this work?
You could frame it in a couple of different ways. So from a technical perspective, as a photograph, it's just absolutely superb. As we mentioned before, the cropping of it leads to kind of that cinematic viewing of, you know, a aspect ratio of 9:16 or thereabouts. Yes.
I mean, it looks like a close-up in one of those sort of classic Hollywood black and white films, doesn't it? The camera zooming on the face of the movie star, and there's Tracy's face looking right at us, the viewer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you get that kind of glamour. And there's another hint of glamour with the little earring, whether that's a pearl or whatever, that little sparkle there and the sparkle of her eyes. And you get that ability through Michael's know-how of how to position lights in this studio, what backdrop to use, what lens to use, and also how to crop it in the darkroom, because this is before digital cameras exist as well. And the way that cropping allows for these arms to be chopped off kind of halfway the forearm, so whether they are Tracy's arms or someone else's, we don't know.
Yeah.
That leads to many questions, so you can go down that narrative in terms of what this might be saying. And so you can go through that kind of photographic technical aspect and how it fits also in the area of portrait photography with the chiaroscuro and the heart and the shadows kind of coming around. It has that kind of sculptural feel as well.
Yep.
But also I think introducing students, or indeed the general public, to that idea of Aboriginal art expanding beyond the traditional art media.
It's
not just dot painting, it's not just bark painting, it's not just these traditional art forms that come from community, but it can be any media.
Yeah.
And what stories does that allow us to kind of look into, to investigate, you know, what rereading of history can we make? Histories of Australia should be kind of looked at and investigated when we look at an image like this, where you have this, with a portrait photography, it is quite a personal event. So with those early images of Aboriginal Australians compared to this, and remarkably, you know, they're taken only almost 100 years apart.
Yeah, interesting. Now, on a personal level, have you found that the way you connect with the photograph has changed over the time that you've dealt with it, both at the Union and now the Chow Tak Wing?
Yeah, I think it has. So I've had the fortunate privilege of meeting Tracy on a number of occasions between then and now. And I think knowing her personality and getting to know her a bit more, and she can be quite cheeky in a way, but also very serious as well. She's got a wonderful delight, and she also has that respect of other artists, and I think that really shows with this image, being willing to pose for Michael Riley at that time. And
do you see it now through fresh eyes?
With its display in the current exhibition at the Chow Tak Wing Museum, being in the context of the three other portraits by Michael Riley, I think I come to appreciate Michael Riley's deep connection with his peers, with his community, with his fellow artists that existed at that time in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
And I think it's a beautiful image, and showing the connections to Sydney University and more broadly through country New South Wales, and particularly being in Bathurst for 5 years on that Wiradjuri country as well.
Yeah.
I think having that kind of affinity with that landscape and community there, and then coming back and seeing this portrait work again with his other works, kind of symbolic landscape and country works.
If you could choose a single word to describe this image, what would it be?
I think we mentioned it a few times, and I've thought about it a lot. I'd say connection.
Mm.
Connection in terms of Michael's connection with Tracy.
Yep.
Mike.
I mean, that's quite clear just in the way she's looking at the camera. She obviously trusts Michael a lot.
Absolutely. To be willing to pose like this, I think, shows her confidence in Michael's ability to capture that moment. But yeah, that personal, almost endearing gaze, and their history, their connection through media, through film and photography.
Yep.
My personal connection with the image being in the Union Art exhibition in 2013 at Verge, and then also being on display at the moment.
Yeah.
And having worked in photography myself as an art form, seeing that technical ability as well, connecting with that.
So this particular image of Tracy Moffat and the three others, as you've mentioned, by Michael Riley in the Chow Chak Wing collection, all four of them are currently on display in our exhibition on Level 1, titled Photography and the Performative. If visitors to the Chow Chak Wing Museum get the chance to see the photos in the flesh, what would you like them to think about?
I'd like them to see them within the context of that exhibition, Photography and the Performative, and how these, in that section, performing bodies. And as I've been kind of mentioning, that connection that Michael had to his community, his Aboriginal art community in Sydney,
yep.
but also his family community to Moree,
yep.
and to Dubbo as well, and the connection to, the connections to Sydney University itself as a site, with Charles Perkins and Tracy and Michael both working at Sydney College of the Arts. And also looking at this particular series of portraits in the art exhibition, but also within there's another historic photography exhibition, the Staged Photograph, which is kind of interesting when you consider those photographs were taken in the studio and then in the backyard you can see that through the advancement of photography technology, with people being able to take cameras to their backyards and compose it themselves, and staging photographs and thinking about how you'd pose it. So thinking about family, friends, your community members, how would you photograph them?
Yeah.
Or also, how would you want to pose for a photograph if you were to have your portrait taken, particularly with these images, because they're very stark. They're completely studio portraiture with a blank background.
Yeah.
So everything's very much on the pose, and you're looking at all the features of the person and how it's presented. So it's quite an intimate gaze and an intimate viewing.
Thank you, Julian. That's been a wonderful conversation. I know I will personally look at the work in a very different lens now from following on from this conversation. Thank you for sharing your time and your knowledge.
Thank you, Craig.
Object Matters is recorded on the grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The University of Sydney and the Chow Chak Wing Museum wishes to pay our respects to the traditional custodians of the lands.
Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app, and connect with the Chow Chak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.